This is talking with Jack Locke on 17th August 76 at Cambridge. Now, can you tell me just a bit about what your scientific background was before you got into radio astronomy?
Yes, I was trained as a physicist and got my doctor's degree in molecular spectroscopy in doing some infrared work. And then upon graduation in 1949, I went to the Dominion Observatory in Ottawa to undertake their solar program, which had been really held in abeyance during the war, and to start it up again.
This is optical solar
this
work.
This is optical solar work, yes. And did some survey solar flare work with Leo filter type of instrument, and some infrared spectroscopy with a large grating instrument, which I constructed there.
So you were instrumentally inclined in terms of building instruments and such,
Yes. And I had broken my education during the war and been in the Canadian Navy from 1942 to 1945. And working mostly as an instructor in electronics and with specialization in sonar, which we called ASDIC in those days.
What did ASDIC stand for?
Anti-submarine detection equipment. Actually it was anti-submarine detection investigating committee, which is the name of the committee which had been set up by the Royal Navy to examine the problem, and then the equipment which they developed just took that name.
See.
But now it's all called sonar,
right,
which was the American term. The head of the observatory, the Dominion Observatory in those days, was Dr. Beals, Dr. C.S. Beals. He was a Dominion astronomer. We had titled the Dominion Astronomer then, which has since lapsed. There's no longer a Dominion Astronomer. He had spent most of his career at the Victoria Observatory, at the Dominion Astrophysical Observatory. And that observatory had traditionally been involved in galactic studies, studies of galactic rotation and densities and so on. And both he and I became interested, I think at the same time, in getting the Dominion Observatory involved in radio astronomy. And at that time, the hydrogen line work was just expanding.
Now, what time are you talking about?
This is in the early 1950s.
Right.
1953 or 4.
Right. The Dutch were just beginning their surveys. And
that's right. Yes.
Right.
And it looked as if this, to get into that field, would be complementary to the work which was being done on Victoria, and that was the basis on which we approached the Canadian government for money to build an observatory. Now it turned out at that time that the National Research Council, which was another agency of the government, was involved in radio astronomy. As you know, Arthur Covington, right after the war, started the solar work at the, within the National Research Council. It was an outgrowth of the work that the council had been doing during the war in radar. He turned the equipment around to what was his hobby at that time, astronomy. And the National Research Council had ideas of expanding their interests into other areas of radio astronomy other than the solar. And
that was the only thing going was Covington's group.
Yes, that's right.
At that time.
Strictly solar.
And who were the people that were interested in expanding it in NRC?
Well, mostly I think Norm Broughton. Norm Broughton and Wilf Med, who were working with Covington at the time, wanted to expand.
Mm-hmm.
Covington himself wanted to stay strictly in the solar work, but and the man who actually was pushing for a large telescope, general purpose radio telescope, for the National Research Council, was Don McKinley, who president of the National Research Council and since retired.
He was did a lot of media radar work, the
That's
same
right.
fellow?
That's the man.
And
McKinley and Millman did a lot of the radar
right.
work.
And he was pushing, you say, however, for some radio astronomy.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the basis of this, all of this, was simply looking around at what the English and the Australians were doing and saying that...
Yeah, it's a new field, but, you know, we right. should be in it if we're going to be, do up-to-the-minute astronomy. So that, sort of by accident, there were two government groups in Canada involved in radio astronomy.
Right.
In the Dominion Observatory, which was in the government department, the Dominion Observatory had always been involved in optical astronomy, and it seemed logical to expand into the radio end of things. And the National Research Council approached it mainly from the engineering point of view. They mm-hmm. Were involved in electrical engineering, electronic engineering, had gotten into solar radio astronomy and wanted to expand into more general radio astronomy. And the two proposals really went to before the government, before Treasury Board of our government at the same time.
And when was this?
I'd have to check the dates, but it would be about 1955.
And what were the proposals for?
Well, our proposal was very specific. It was to build a 25-meter telescope and with a hydrogen line spectrometer and to do, at least initially, first project would be hydrogen line mm-hmm. observations. Their approach was, the National Research Council approach was to build a large parabolic telescope. They hadn't settled on the size, I don't think, at that time, but to do more general purpose continuum observations of radio sources. And Dr. Stacey, who was the president of the National Research Council at that time, withdrew his proposal to the government in favor of ours, which was a bit surprising, but was typical of the man. He thought that our proposal, that we knew what we were going to do, whereas they were just expanding.
Yeah.
So he withdrew their proposal in favor of ours. Well, as things turned out, subsequently, the National Research Council went forward again with a proposal to build a large telescope, and whereas in 1955 they were asking for something in the order of a 25-meter telescope, by the time they went forward the second time with their proposal, they were going for a 46-meter telescope. So they ended up with, we got started first, but they ended up with the larger telescope.
And so this is the Algonquin telescope. And when did they put in the proposal for that Algonquin one?
That was in the early 1960s, about 62, I believe. And it was completed in 1967.
And the people to talk to about that one would be Broughton and Med again? Or?
Yes, although now my career has switched too. I left the Dominion Observatory to join the National Research Council when the Algonquin telescope was nearing completion. And now, subsequently, all of the astronomy in the Canadian government is within the National Research Council.
I see.
It's been combined.
But going back to 54, 55, so you were given your grant.
Yes.
And how much was this?
Well, the telescope itself was about $250,000, and the installation was $250,000. And we did a site survey in 1957, looking at a number of possible sites. We restricted the search to mountainous regions of the country, and this meant particularly British Columbia.
For protection from interference?
Yes. Yeah. And we found what I think is still one of the best sites in the world, at near Penticton, mm-hmm. White Lake, which is a flat, relatively flat area, about a mile square, surrounded by, almost uniformly surrounded by mountains. It's So it's a welfare tax, you'd say.
What happened to sort of 2 years in there? Was this just finagling with the government to actually get the money?
Yes, it takes some time, of course, to get a project approved, and then of course, it takes time to build the telescope and to draw up the plans for the observatory site itself.
But it was all pretty straightforward. There were no great technical or political problems in there.
No, very few. That was a time when it was relatively easy to get money, and when governments didn't question as closely as they do now about how you were going to spend it. But we bought a Kennedy telescope, mm-hmm. Which was designed after the one for Harvard, and which was almost an off-the-shelf item. We didn't have to do any design work ourselves. We bought the first receiver also, because we had to build up the staff from nothing at that time.
Now, you were in charge of this whole thing, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. I guess partly because I had contributed to the initial proposal, I got saddled with the job of seeing it through. But I was one of the few people in the Dominion Observatory with any electronic experience at all, which I gained during the war primarily. So I was the first officer in charge of the observatory. And then, of course, we found that there were several Canadians who were studying abroad in radio astronomy. Carmen Costain,
Cambridge,
yeah. And John Galt, who was a physicist and working in industry at that time, wanted to make a change, and we knew of his interest in electronics. And he, while the observatory was building, he spent a year and a half at Jodrell to gain some experience.
Oh, yes.
And so, that was the initial group. Then,
so the site survey was 57, and the telescope was completed when?
It was officially opened in 1960, June 20th, 1960.
And so this first group started in 60, really?
Yes.
Which you're talking about. Costain, Galt.
And Rob Roger, who strangely enough, was born in Penticton, where we located the observatory. We didn't know at that time that he was in Jodrell getting a PhD in radio astronomy.
I mean, was he there right in the beginning of 60? I didn't realize that he went back.
Well, he joined us very soon after. Mm. He wasn't there in June 1960.
Right.
And then the other member of scientific member of staff was Ed Argyle,
right.
who had helped me with the site survey, and he had not worked as a radio astronomer, but rather as a radio amateur for many years, and was working at the Dominion Astrophysical Observatory in optical astronomy, but his interests were mainly in radio, so he was asked to join the group. And I guess it was a typical situation in that it was much easier to get money for the capital investment for the telescope and the buildings than it was to get positions to hire staff. So we had to take some people and retrain them, I guess, to do the radio astronomy.
Well, what was your first scientific program?
Well, the first one was hydrogen line work. We did a survey of the Addy Center region and a detailed study of the hydrogen distribution in IC443, which is a supernova remnant.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the first two programs we did. And very soon after we got underway, Carm Costain, who had been doing low-frequency radio astronomy at Cambridge, wanted to do low-frequency astronomy in Canada. And so we started construction of a 22 megahertz array, T-shaped array.
Right. I talked to Carmen, so he told me quite a bit about that.
And it was a, you know, it was a logical thing to do in that site, which was a well-protected site,
and it
worked out very well. Then subsequently, as you probably know, we built a 10 megahertz array, which is useful only at sunspot minimum.
But now this must have drained away, though, from the work of the dish. Your staff didn't increase that much, and yet you had this whole low-frequency project.
No, for many years we were understaffed. Not only in the scientific end, but the technical end as well. So everybody on the staff, you know, handled the soldering.
Right. But nevertheless, that was my point. If you're understaffed, and then you have this new instrument, and then you a low-frequency instrument, the dish might be neglected relative to what it would have been otherwise.
Well, I guess that's true, but most of the effort in the low-frequency work is in the design of the telescope. The observing is essentially, you know, automatic, except for changing the phasing on a daily basis. And then the observations are quite slow.